The Therapy is a Christian podcast is all things mental health and Christ. We specifically talk about how mental health and God are merged together to foster growth, healing, and making mental health a normal conversation. I'm your host, Roz and Renee, and welcome to the show. Hello and welcome. You are listening to the Therapy is a Christian podcast. I'm your host, Roz and Renee. Welcome to another episode of the show. Hi, y'all. I am super excited today because I get to interview one of my favorite people who not only was a previous client of mine, but she also now has a podcast. And I'm so excited for you to hear about her story, her testimony, but also receive a bunch of information as it relates to caregiving. So I know that caregiving is something that I've never talked about on the podcast. And so I am so excited to have her to share her insight because she has a ton of insight. For those of you who might have recently, maybe younger, be a caregiver for someone as a parent, or you might be a mom, a wife, and having to take on the responsibility as a caregiver. And so I met Miss Marianne actually, I want to say it was in 2021. She joined my program for Show Up Sis. I had the beautiful opportunity to coach her in that program. And then I have met her actually in person. And then we also got a chance to work together doing this. So I'm so, so excited for you all to meet her and hear her story. So Miss Marianne, why don't you say hi?
Well, hello, everyone. So happy to be on the Christian podcast with Rosalind. This is a journey. I always tell people as a caregiver, caregiving is not a solo activity. You know,
for sure.
You're not going to be doing this all by yourself, but a lot of us think good. That's the part that we don't understand. And no one tells us that.
Right.
You know, and so coming to being able to be on the show just to share some nuggets with you guys is going to be so awesome.
Yeah. So I want you to go ahead and start with telling us a little bit about you and what you do.
All right. So,
and don't skip Miss Marianne, because I know you got a lot that you do.
I know. First of all, I am a registered nurse and I'm a veteran as well. So being a caregiver is not like what I would say. It has always been a passion of mine, I can say. And so a little bit about me is that I love people and I love taking care of people. And so I have to be careful about that, though. You know what I mean? Because when you care so much about others, you know, you take on different roles. Mm-hmm. And so as a caregiver, you know, I have two children, adult children, and three grandsons. And so being in that role as well, and I had 9 siblings and I have 5 left, 5 of us is left. And so the role of being a caregiver started for me at an early age when I was caring for my mom, you know, not actually knowing I was caring for my mom,
mm-hmm.
because she was an insulin dependent diabetic.
Really?
And that was early on in my age that I learned that, having a knowledge of insulin dependent diabetic, mm-hmm. versus a diabetic type 2.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so,
because they are both different.
Right. They are both different. And so my mom was losing her eyesight. And one day she came to me because, you know, quote unquote, you know, they always have that chosen child in the family. You don't know you to be the chosen one.
You don't know that.
I'm serious. And so things start happening. And so she started to share with me that she couldn't see the line. She would tell me, okay, it has to be at, and she was really high, it has to be at 55. And so she said, but I can't see it. And so I would take that little syringe, pull up. I didn't know it was insulin at the time. You know, I just pull up what my mom told me to pull up. And then I'll watch her give herself this injection in her stomach. And so she would say, before you go to school, we're going to do, or the night before, I'll pull it up for her and she'll have it in the fridge.
So how old were you during that time?
I was only 12 years old.
Wow.
12 years old. And I
so
really
for a lot of people, that may be, especially if your parent has had a lifelong medical issues. like it almost becomes a unspoken responsibility of like sometimes helping them through that. So you kind of got a taste of that a little bit at 12. Okay.
Yes. I got a taste of it a little. And then I had more concern. I think I had the more concerns about her because I knew some of the things that she couldn't see, you know what I mean? And seeing, you know, looking at her eyes, and as I'm a, you know, I'm just in 12th grade, but at that time you start to learn a little bit about science in school, different things, you know, of that sort. And so when I would come home, I'm like, you need glasses, or you got your glasses on, but you couldn't, she couldn't really see.
You know, it's so interesting you said that, because my grandmother, my dad's mom, my grandmother became blind from diabetes. I was really young. So I probably was, I can remember staying at her house during summers, and I want to say I was around 8 or 9. She was blind, and then completely blind, but it wasn't like a blind where she had to use a walker or a stick. She would primarily be in her house, but she knew her way around her house. Mm-hmm. So she could literally tell me where she knew, even though she was blind, where she was going. But I can remember when I was early on as a little kid, we lived in California. I probably was maybe 3 or 4. I can remember she could see because she would dress me and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting you said that, because I can think of, as I've gotten older, when I was around her, because she passed probably in, it was before me and Nico got married. So it was around like 2017, 2018. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the year off the top of my head, but she, we had to do a lot for her, like take her to the store, or, and at the time we didn't have Instacart. We had none of that stuff we have now, but she would like tell me to dial Nordstrom for her. Cause she would order all this stuff off Nordstrom. Girl, I don't know why, Dillard's and all kind of stuff, but like, it would be so interesting to see like the care we had to have for her because she couldn't see.
Yeah. Yeah.
She could pull her pills out of her bottle. She would put certain rubber bands in certain parts of her pill bottles to be able to like know what pill was what, but she would tell me, read that to me. And so you think as a kid or a young adult, like, oh, I'm just helping my grandmother. You're not thinking that you're actually part of their caregiver plan.
Yeah.
Like what that looks like.
Yeah. And see, back in the day, we were caregivers without even knowing. And I can remember the time my dad was the caregiver for his parents. You know what I mean? Getting them from Mississippi and bringing them home, bring them to Chicago, where I live at now. And, you know, making sure that they had a place to stay. So those things happened when I was younger. So going back to mom, eventually she had cataracts in her eyes. Mm-hmm. As I aged, you know, got older, I think she had the surgery. I probably was in high school when she wound up getting the surgery for the, get the cataracts removed, you know, from her eyes. And that got better for her as far as seeing, you know, having her glasses and cataracts removed. Cause as time moved, medical procedure, medical technology, everything medical gets better as time move on, but also mom have to be receptive to that.
Yeah. And that's that's a big thing I would love for you to kind of touch on. I can remember, and I'm so glad that we're having this conversation, because I completely forgot like all the stuff that we used to do for my grandmother. But like we would clean her house, we would go over there, and like she never ever needed help with bathing. She like as even though she was blonde, she had some level of independence, but there was still, of course, very apparent detriments as far as being able to just live a normal life. Mm-hmm. What do you think, especially as the not the caregiver but the person, she always felt like she never wanted to burden people, so she would try to figure out all these ways to like do things independently. I can remember there were times I would help her like cut vegetables, and she would tell me what knife to use, give me the knife, and she would hold it and cut it. And I'm like, grandma, how are you even cutting all this stuff? She's like, girl, I got to figure it out, because I don't want nobody to have to, I still want to be able to live my life a little bit. But so for the person, what do you find especially difficult for them as they're transitioning from being maybe even fully independent to now having to rely on people?
It's very hard when they like a person that has the illness and have to depend on someone else. They don't want to lose their independence. And so I would definitely say with probably with your grandma, I don't know as far as what was the healthcare system like, what was her odds of being fully blind to having some type of surgery regarding to her eyes.
She couldn't have a surgery.
She probably had glaucoma.
I can't remember.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, with diabetic, you get glaucoma, and at the end of the day, it does cause you to go completely blind.
Yeah, she was completely blind. She couldn't see
once
anything.
The it detaches, it's, you know, you just, it's nothing else that they can do at that time. Mm-hmm. But now we have different things, you know, technology is totally different now. But seeing that when she was, she wanted to keep her independency. And so she was doing all the things to say, you know what, I can do this. You know, that pride right there, you know, because our pride would keep us from saying, okay, I need help in this. But I also want to make sure that they don't put me, you know, because she's thinking back in her head, okay, where they going to put me if I can't take care of myself in this house by myself? If they're going to take my house away, if they're going to make me, you know, get in a nursing home somewhere, you know, all those things come to, you know, other people when they're ill and don't want to be, you know, don't want to continue with their regular, with their regular life. But not knowing what would happen to them.
Yeah. So even not even for just the caregiver, because I want you to touch on that too, but even for the patient, or I don't say patient, but the person that you're taking care of, emotionally, they're going through their own transition and their own life struggles. Like I can think of, and this is a very small, it's not the same, but it is. Like I can think of postpartum having to have people take care of me while I'm laboring, having people take care of me after I have the baby. That is like a very different type of moment, because you're so used to being mobile and then you can't. I can think of when my mom had cancer, she's so used to being mobile and then having to have people literally like bring her water, tuck her into bed, like those types of things that you don't think about. They're going through their own transition. So for the caregiver, what have you found for yourself and also people you have assisted are some of the kind of the struggles that they have, because caregiving itself is extremely exhausting. Well, I can think of like my dad, I can think of my aunts. So what kind of things have you seen for yourself, but also the struggles you have also seen for other people?
Well, the other thing is definitely burnout. You know what I mean? That burnout part, back in the day, we didn't call it burnout. We called it, I'm just tired, you know, but now it's burnout, it's fatigue, it's anger, you know, because you angry because your family members, you know, need your help all the time. So now you don't have that life that you had, your independent life, but also having picking on that responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you're not able to tell, you know, you will talk to the other person, your other family members, and tell them everything that's going on. But you are that person, mm-hmm. you know, that it factor, you know, that totally.
Yeah, no one can like take care of them like you. And I can even think of like with caregiving of thinking about a special needs child, like for a parent who's having to caregive for a special needs child. So there's anger, there's burnout, there is advocacy, I'm pretty sure. Talk about the advocacy piece and like the struggles with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. You know, with smaller children, I worked at a facility a while back with small children. I want to say age ranges from 7 to 20. They age out of this facility. But at any rate, they were, you know, had autism, different illness that their parents couldn't take care of them. You know, and so from Monday through Friday, they lived at this facility and they had to have paralegals, you know, paraprofessionals come and take care of them, just the basic needs, and had a nurse like myself come to there to do like G2 feedings, the medications, different things of that sort. That's the part that the family members couldn't take care of, you know, choose to have to learn how to do those things, but also they have to work. You know, so the working parent that cannot not work to take care of the family, has to work. So sometimes they have to release, be able to release the children to other caregivers, you know, and that, and it gets shameful. You feel shameful. A lot of times parents, when they're in that position, they feel shameful that they don't have their children with them. Also, they feel shameful. Well, what did I do wrong that my child is like that?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I can think of, I have so many thoughts about this too, Miss Marianne. I think what's important to, I want to drive home for people to understand, is the emotional side of this, because I think it's the thing that's not discussed. There are times where I've helped certain clients through like them having to be their caregiver or somebody, but also still have boundaries for themselves in the interim. So I want you to touch on that in a second. But my son, which my oldest, which will now be, by the time people listen to this, I had two kids. So I'm currently pregnant. But my oldest son had ear infections, like consistently the first year of his life. For a good period of about 6 months, he had consistent back-to-back ear infections. And the doctor kind of told us, oh, you need to think about getting tubes for him because this could impact his speech. At the time, I'm thinking, this ain't gonna be nothing. So now he's 22 months and he's in speech therapy because of a speech delay that he was told he had, or they told us he had, because of the ear infections. He couldn't hear for a good period of time. And I remember going through the feeling of, before they officially evaluated him, questioning what's wrong, like, what did I do wrong? What more could I have done? Getting angry. I remember feeling so angry at his daycare lady, even though this isn't her fault. It just like feeling so angry towards the people that are providing care. Me being frustrated with my husband because he and I are like on two different spectrums of the way we feel about this. And just feeling so isolated and alone in my feelings around it, because I felt like as a mom, I should be doing everything. So when something happens and then you are the caregiver and you feel, essentially you feel powerless, you feel very helpless. And like you said, you feel ashamed of what should I have done? And so for people that are like taking care of the person that they love, what are often you find, I know you talked about burnout and all of those other things, what are some other emotions that you find that come up often?
Sometimes I find the emotions of giving up, you know, you know, with a child, you don't do that, but I usually focus more on the adult person, because as time that, you know, as a caregiver, we feel like we need to give up and put our loved ones in a nursing facility, and it costs you so much money, you know, to change. You have to do so many things. Instead, I feel like instead of giving up, you need to, I want them to, as a caregiver, life coach, I want them to learn how to navigate that system, how to navigate that frustration. You know, okay, I'm frustrated about this, but how can I change it? I'm angry about this, but how can I change this anger? You know, what are some of the services that's out there can help me with my family while they're at home with me? It is services that are available, but sometimes as a healthcare providers, the doctors, some of the nurses, they don't know. Some nurses know, but sometimes they do not share. And so when you don't know these things that's available to you and you can keep your loved one at home, or for instance, when you're in your situation, when your child, the doctor told your child that the child needed the ear, ear tubes, you wasn't aware that that could have changed a lot of things. If they would have gave you like, okay, mom, let me get you in counseling. Let me let you talk to another person that child had the same symptom, but we allowed them to get the ear tubes and now things are different.
You know? Yeah. He's been in speech therapy for like a month and is like,
these are the things that I see as being in a healthcare for over 35 years that our provider does not provide for people in general. When they have these difficult conversations with difficult decisions to make, you know, and feeling like, okay, you know, I know that we all, you know, Christian people, and we always want to say, okay, God gonna fix all of this. But sometimes you have to be knowledgeable. God, that's why God put a lot of doctors, you know, counselors, things of that sort on this earth, so then we can get that counseling, or we can get that knowledge from someone else and say, okay, I'll give it a try. Because I believe that if you would have spoke to a mom that had with those issues in, and she saw the difference, you would have said 100%, come on, put these tubes in my baby ear.
Listen, yeah, it was. We put the tubes in, but I will say there wasn't until after I started to see some of the delay that I was like, I knew who had a kid.
There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, one who had a kid, with all my friends who had kids, their kids were talking. Yeah. So it was like, I did not know how to cope. Yeah. And it wasn't until I actually joined a mom group and I randomly researched in the group speech delay, and I saw all the moms talk about the emotions they felt around their kids having a speech delay or getting speech therapy. Mm-hmm. I remember the day I read it, I bawled, and I did not realize how much I had built up from this. Because again, I'm praying, I'm calling the Holy Ghost down, like, okay, Lord, come on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was also in denial around him getting speech therapy, because I was like, he doesn't need this. Or even the people around me were like, oh, some kids just don't talk. Sometimes they are late talkers. You don't have to worry. But I was concerned and wanted to advocate for my kid, but I didn't have the resources to know how. Mm-hmm. And so even with that, like you said, there were other things I could have known beforehand if I had someone to kind of guide me through the process. So let's kind of switch back to adult caregiving, because I know that that's your area of focus, but talk about for people some of the other things that come up with caregiving. So I know you've mentioned to me before the financial responsibility and like navigating that and like medical documents and all that. So talk about some of the struggles that with caregiving.
Definitely. You know, as I was, you know, I was a provider for my dad. My mom passed away in 1994. So that just switched over, you know, when she got sick and went to the hospital, she never came back home. You know, and I was in the ER. I can remember when I was in the ER, you know, you don't want that person to say, you know, please take care of your daddy, because I don't know what he going to do if something happened to me. Now, she left that responsibility, boom, right on me.
Oh, talk about that. Because I think that there's not often times, and then we'll switch back to the financial, I think there's not often times when people are caregivers, the expectation that the person we love puts on us to take care of them and also take care of other people. And I know that there are people that I have helped in counseling that feel the responsibility and also the obligation that they have to do all of this on their own. So they never relinquish it, or they almost feel like it's an ode to the person. So talk a little bit about that.
That was me. You know, I felt that because she gave me that responsibility. That was the last time she officially talked to me. Words out her mouth. After she left that ER, she had I think she had like cardiac arrest. We had to rush back to the hospital, and they had to put on, you know, she got intubated, never came off of that. But these are the last words she said to me. Now I got this big responsibility of taking care of my father. Cause I'm like, oh my gosh, she didn't tell nobody else. I'm the only person was there. Now,
so how do you navigate that?
And it was hard. I'm going to let you know, it was hard. At first, I thought it was going to be an easy task. I'm a known caregiver. You know, I was caring for the soldiers in the Army, okay? I wasn't a registered nurse at the time, but I had experience. And so once everything happened, the sad part is I had to take Dad out of his own environment.
Wow.
And that was the hardest part for me, is taking him out of his own environment, because he wasn't being provided for in his own environment, you know. And when I came and saw him not being provided for, I'm like, no, my mother told me to take care of you. And
was he in a nursing home?
No, he was in a home with other siblings.
Oh, so he had other siblings that were taking care of him.
In this home with him.
Wow.
But they wasn't taking care of him.
Wow.
And that was hard for me, because I'm next to the youngest, and these are older siblings, and not taking care of that.
Oh, so your siblings?
My siblings.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. So these,
I, you said siblings. You know what I mean? I they don't have that. They think, you know, when you have a, and that's the issue, you know, with being a caregiver is when you're the chosen one to be that caregiver for the family member and your other siblings is either in the home with them or in their own home, but they said, I'm going to help you, but they do not. And so you have that, you know, difficult conversation with your siblings or, you know, you're fighting with amongst each other or whatever. But at the end of the day, who's, you know, who's going to take care of that? All right, that's what I need to know. And I said, I was the one that our mother told me to take care of them. So if you guys are not going to do it, so I allowed them another month. And every time I would get off of work, come over, he still don't look the same. He's deteriorating.
What was his diagnosis?
So he had early onset dementia after my mother died. They were married for 54 years. Just imagine being that person, that lady being that man, being your person, taking care of you. Y'all do everything together.
First of all, I'm in my 30s. So imagining me being with one person for 50 years, I ain't even there yet. But
girl, like I say, yes. I couldn't do it. And I was, you know what I mean? I tried to. I did 21.
So once he hit early onset dementia, uh-huh. Of course, that's a progressive diagnosis. Yes. Mm-hmm. Did your siblings understand it? Did they know what to do? Was it kind of, did you feel like it was negligent on their part? Or was it just kind of like they just didn't know or they didn't want to know? Like, what do you think it was?
I think they felt like, I know dad had a broken heart, you know what I mean? And so the siblings felt like if they got him another woman, you know, these are guys, my brother, they got him another girlfriend or get him a girlfriend, he'll do better. You know what I mean? But all of that didn't, that wasn't a substitute for his wife, the care that his wife was giving him. You know what I mean? And so I would hear these things from other people. I said, let me go back over here and check on my daddy. These people doing all this craziness, you know, come on now. Yeah. So one time I just came over there unexpected. I said, oh, no, daddy, you got to come up out of here. They could keep this house, but they are not going to neglect you in your care.
Yeah. So you advocate even with siblings. Yeah. And that's super interesting, too, because I have so many stories, obviously. All of them are coming up now. But I remember my uncle, when my uncle got sick, he had... he passed in 2020. Mm-hmm. But my mom was his power of attorney. My aunt was the second person that was kind of like helping to take care. And then my step uncle was also assisting. And I can remember my mom always saying she would be so frustrated with just the way they all did things differently, but it was like nobody was really like looking at the whole picture of his care. Mm-hmm. Where she's like, I know I physically can't take care of him. So she would call the nursing home. She would call the state. She would call all of his doctors and all of this. Mm-hmm. And everybody's just like, we just gotta make sure you take his medicine. And I'm like, and so she would feel so frustrated because she felt like she was the only one managing. Mm-hmm. And so like that, even having to navigate with siblings, that can be rough because you don't know how to properly communicate it while also maintaining your. This episode of the God and Mental Health Podcast is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. I am so excited to tell y'all about this brand because it has been so helpful to me. So I am not in my 20s anymore. And as I'm getting older, I'm really kind of understanding a little bit more about my hormones after having two kids. I'm really understanding like my mood shifts, my fatigue, sometimes my stress throughout the month, especially during those cycles of time before my period. So I recently started researching cycle seeking, and it was so helpful for me because I really kind of began to understand these different changes when I am feeling overwhelmed, when I am feeling tired, when I am feeling like my mood is different. I'm also just experiencing some of those kind of early PMS symptoms of like bloating and gassy and poor sleep and kind of racing thoughts and low mood. And so I started doing some research into cycle syncing and kind of came to understand that our different periods before our cycle change because of our hormones. And so I was thinking about a way to combat this, and
Happy Mammoth is a brand that I think is going to be super helpful to some of my audience and might be experiencing some of these things. And so I think a lot of times we kind of associate our different moods with something's wrong with us, or that there is actually something that we're struggling with mental health wise, but not really understanding that as a woman, we naturally have up and down moods because of our hormones. And so for me, if you are someone that's maybe in your mid-20s and you're kind of seeing like during different periods of the month, you're more sad or you're more overwhelmed, this might be a good opportunity for you to maybe supplement and try to combat that with some of the amazing products at Happy Mammoth. So I want to talk to you all about particularly one specific product called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormone changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And it means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. If you're someone that definitely struggles with maybe bloating or maybe sleep or even racing thoughts or low moods, Hormone Harmony would be perfect for you. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order with Happy Mammoth. Just use the code THERAPY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, HappyMammoth.com. And use the code THERAPY for 15% off today. Now, let's get back to the show. Emotions.
Girl, you better say it. Because, like, at the end of the day, a lot of times, what I do is teach. I talk about how to talk to the physicians, how to talk to the people at the nursing home, what's needed at, for, you know, because sometimes you can't do it at home. You know, times has changed. So you can't do all that care, 24/7 care at home on your own. And if you can't do it, don't feel guilty about not being able to do it.
That's the thing, because I can imagine if something were to happen with my mom and she had to come live with us, sometimes that becomes a burden on marriages and even taking care of your kids. And so you feel bad that you can't do it. But also sometimes the boundary or the best type of care you can give is to put them somewhere where they're going to get 24/7 care and you aren't the one. And that's an emotional transition for people at times.
It's definitely an emotional transition. And especially I think more people started doing the, you know, we never know that pandemic was going to come. And that's the part that showed a lot of people about their loved ones. How much they love their loved ones, how much, you know, okay, they're in a facility, but I can't see them. I can't lay an eye on them. I really don't know what's going on in that nursing home. You know, all of these things have came to the light. So caregivers are thinking differently now about their loved ones placed in a nursing home, of their loved ones who can probably transition from a nursing home with the help of physical therapy, occupational therapy, to assisted living so they can do things on their own. So it's different types of placement. Whereas my dad was able to live with us, I made things much better for him by living with me and my spouse at the time with my children. And so we was able to get those things that he needed. I also, as time, I did get burnt out from taking care of my father at home. I became angry because days that he was mad at me, he would go to the restroom and smear bowel movement all over the door, the window, because he's angry at me.
Did he know who you were at that time? Like he knew you were.
He didn't. As time moved on, he couldn't say my name. He gave me the name of boss because he felt like I was the
boss. Was association a little
bit. Yeah, it was association that I was the boss of everything. You know, okay, boss, you know what I mean?
I'm laughing, Miss Marianne, but I know it's not funny at the time, but wow.
Yeah, so he associated me with boss. He loved my spouse at the time. Him, they were best of friends. you know, because he knew how to handle him. He would talk to him, you know, take him out. He would, you know, he was good with my dad, and I have to give him credit for that. You know what I mean? Because he would take my dad out in a wheelchair to the mall. You know, we're in Chicago. He said, okay, I'm taking him out. You know, he could still walk to the down the little stair, a couple of stairs, and he'll put him in a wheelchair, take the wheelchair, and push him around in the mall so he could see people and eat at the mall. So he would do those type of things for him when he was still able to do some things. And because we had him with us for 12 years. Just imagine
12
years with someone with dementia, type 1, type 2, all of it, until he couldn't even talk. He couldn't even talk. He wound up having a stroke. I had him at home, tube feeding and everything, you know. So we did the long haul.
Wow.
We did the long haul with him, you know what I mean? And I mean, life did change for me, you know, couldn't go anywhere much. My sister, my older sister started to help me with him because she was a caregiver for someone else and another, taking care of another lady in the home. And I was like, what home care are you working for? Because I need help with dad at home. I'm working, you know, I'm working now. This is time has passed, you know, this is in the 90s going to 98, 2000s, okay? And so I'm like, I need help with him, you know, because nobody's volunteering with the help, seeing that me and my husband and my small children is doing all of this. And so my sister was like, you know, I need to work, you know, okay, I ain't gonna say all that. So anyway, I found out the home care that she was working at. And so I got social services. So when you dealing with older people, you have to know the benefits of having a Department of Aging. So Department of Aging came to my home to see what my father qualified for. The services, and they go on their income, not my income, or my dad's income. Of the services that he can have. But also my dad worked 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, at one facility. We don't do that no more.
Girl, we shut, baby. I remember when I worked a job for 3 months. My 90th day was when I gave my last day. I think it was the same week. My 90th day, Ms. Marianne, was within my 2 weeks notice. Okay. So we don't do that no more.
I know, you know, because, you know, as we know, the people we working for is not dedicated to us either.
This is true.
You know, so we change.
You got an opportunity to like kind of get some assistance for him, which I want to say that because I feel like there are times where at some point eventually, now that may not always be the option in the beginning or the desire for the person in the beginning, because you often feel guilt around that, or even might feel that from parents when you're growing up, you hear them say, don't ever put me in a nursing home. And as a kid or a young adult, you remember that. So you feel the obligation.
The obligation is there. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, I have told my children that. I'm honestly saying that. I'm sorry. Put in the time.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I apologize for that, but not really. Because I felt like I put in the time I have provided, you know, but I ain't gonna go there.
I say that to say as a, even as, I mean, I'm thinking to myself in my 30s, I was like, yeah, I don't want to be in a nursing home when I'm old. I want to be with my husband. Like I want us to travel, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But yeah. Like, even then you think about as a kid, you're hearing that. Mm-hmm. And so you're thinking about, well, what depths, like how sick do you have to be before that becomes a thought process, or where mom, would it be worse off if we kept you at home and then I can't take care of you, to the point to where then if I put you somewhere, they would be providing great care for you. And so those become those kind of like hard conversations.
That's why I was there. That's a difficult conversation to have with your adult children at that time, because those are conversations that we do not like talking about. Okay, I know everybody know I'm African-American with my voice
here,
but so African-Americans are so, they do not want to talk about death, they don't want to talk about illness, they think we're going to be healthy forever. No, we are not. So we have to talk about those difficult conversations early in the game.
And also, too, the other thing I want to also mention of is also culturally,
yeah,
we don't talk, we weren't reared up.
Yes.
My age group, at least. Now, you know, everybody talking about the soft life and all that kind of stuff. Now, Ms. Marianne.
Yeah.
But our age group is just now getting to the point of understanding what proper self-care is. Because as a kid, I grew up watching my mom work herself to the bone. And trying to sustain that lifestyle and mentality as a new mom, as a working mom, because now also too, working.
Because you've seen it happen. That's why you've
seen it happen. But also working in this age versus my mom's age is different. Mm-hmm. She worked in the 90s.
Yeah.
So the pay was different then. Like things cost less. Yeah. Now I'm, you know, have to work because things cost more. And so even the balance looks different. And so we're kind of like my age group, I'll say, like, we're kind of like, I ain't trying to work myself to die. I want to work myself so that way I can enjoy life. So when you think about that, it becomes like a very challenging thing to think about of what would be proper for long-term sustainment for my family. And so it is those difficult conversations to have with your children, but it also is those necessary conversations to have. So that way there's care on both ends, because I'm going to care for you as I can even take care of myself too.
Yeah. So that plays a big part.
It feels selfish, but it also is like, what's realistic? That's always my question. Like, what's honestly realistic?
Yeah. So when you have, I definitely believe exactly all of that, what you just said. But I always say, who are today's family caregivers? So now I'll just give you a share of some statistics I have at this moment. 34% boomers are family caregivers. 29 are Gen X. 23 are millennials. And 7% are silent. And then the 6% is Gen Zs. So just think about that when you're thinking about the conversation, how this is going to happen. Okay, and when you're moving forward, as you become that main caregiver, you need to have all those documents in place. You know, the power of attorney, the power of attorney of healthcare, finances. You know what I mean?
Life insurance.
Life insurance.
Basic life insurance, Miss.
Basic life insurance. Like, you know, you can also have, that long-term life insurance. A lot of people don't know about the long-term life insurance, with that carries over from your regular insurance, so that if you want custodial care, the long-term life insurance carry over for the custodial care, meaning that person could come and wash your parents up at home. It's not part of Medicare if they're Medicare age, or if they don't qualify for Medicare. Some parents never worked, and so they can only get Medicaid from the state. So these are the things that, as you know, the generation is moving forward, and the things necessary to talk about with your parents. And if you are the main caregiver, and if it's a group of y'all as the caregivers, let's talk about this. You know, the parent themselves have to be open to talk about it themselves as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be open to talk about, one day I'm not going to be here, and what is my plans for myself?
And so I think that goes back to having some basic things in order. And then I would love for you to talk about like the services you provide as a caregiver life coach. But I think it goes back to, like you said, African Americans kind of understanding that in this day and age, like, we have to really work through the uncomfortability of obligation and really truly what's going to be helpful. Because even as a caregiver, you're not taught what that actually looks like. You go to the doctor, you hear what the doctor say, but you don't really know what questions to ask, how to handle it. I think that's something I see you shaking your head, Ms. Marianne, like, you're super passionate about. But also on the other side of that, basic things. When I got pregnant with my first son, one of the first things me and Nico talked about was life insurance. He was like, you're a Black woman. Because he was the one that implemented. He was like, you're a Black woman now carrying a child. with the way that mortality is with Black women, we need to get you life insurance. And those are things that are scary to think about. Mm-hmm. They're a reality. If something were to happen to me, he wouldn't have the money to bury me.
Girl, as they say in the Black folks' church, pass that head around.
And when my grandmother passed, I remember we had to scramble to get this money for her funeral. We had to ask each other for money to fund my grandmother's funeral. I remember this. And so having life insurance, having a power of attorney, do you want
a DNR. A DNR. Those things I teach. You know what I mean? I emphasize as far as I make you have, it's the knowledge. It's all about the knowledge that you have when you come and talk into a doctor. So me, I want to educate caregivers. So my program, I do educate the caregivers on how to talk to the physician so they can look at you and say, oh, okay, you got it. You understand what I'm not got it. But
because they're going to assume that you know.
Yeah.
And they're not going to, they may not ask, or they may ask you and you're like, yes, but you have truly no idea. And most of us don't really ask out of embarrassment.
Yes.
We don't want to feel embarrassed. We don't want to feel like we don't know about our, but truly y'all, like y'all got to get past it. Like there is just, I remember I would go to my pregnancy appointment, my OB, and I would ask her questions about why I was in pain in certain places. Mm-hmm. And she would just be like, it's just because you're pregnant. So I'm like, you know, I just need to make sure because I don't know. I've never been pregnant, so I don't know. But these are like, you think, oh, you know, they're going to tell you. But no, you need to ask these questions. And I'll have like, I have a high risk doctor and he'll tell me, you are the patients we dream about because you want to ask. I was like, I'm going out of town. What do I need to take with me? Do I need to have something on the plane? He was like, you are so funny, but you're asking the right questions because mm-hmm. you'd rather be informed than not be informed.
That's true.
And so as a caregiver, where the person themselves doesn't have the knowledge or the ability may not to advocate for themselves, it's really important that, you know, a person knows about these documents mm-hmm. and even with the power of an attorney, your rights as a person taking care of them, because it can easily slip away to where you don't know and can't really advocate the way you're supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah, it you know, with being a caregiver is not, as I continue to say, it's not an easy job, not an easy task at all. And so when you're going into that role, because right instantly, we say, okay, we're the caregiver, we can do it. And not knowing all the different avenues around what you're going to be doing as that care main person, that caregiver that takes that role.
Yeah, so as a caregiver life coach, what are some of the things or the frameworks you teach to assist people through that process?
Okay, so first I teach them how to, the changing of the mindset of being a caregiver. Do you have this mindset to do all of these things that's going to come to you? So that mindset has to shift, you know, while you're being a caregiver for your loved one. Definitely not. Also, I help you to navigate the healthcare system, meaning that different things, what's that, who are you taking care of and what's their diagnosis? Let's learn about the disease that they have, you know, what's entail, you know, learning about their medications, you know, all the things that you need to know about that loved one that you're taking care of, you know, because the frightening thing I see is that the caregiver does not know that that person have that illness. So we are so ashamed of telling them, okay, I got high blood pressure, I'm a diabetic, you know, those simple diagnoses. You know, we're going to share if we have cancer because we want them to know. But the silent things we don't talk about, you know, but those type of things can hit us faster than the cancer. You know, because if you have high blood pressure and a diabetic, that causes you to have congestive heart failure because a lot of times those things are not working because you're not eating right. So all of those things play the part in it, you know. So mostly time we are talking about the diseases. We're talking about, you know, are they seeing specialists? Not just a regular doctor. Are you seeing, you know, the specialist that you need to be seeing?
That's good. That's good.
And so, and I'll talk about that, because at the end of the day, if you're not seeing the right doctors to provide the right care for you, then you're not getting the care that you need. You know, and you might not be getting the right medication, or you don't want to take the medication. A lot of times now, this new, you know, generation don't want to take their medications, you know. So who being smart? Because you don't have to continue to take the medication. You can start off, but now you have to change your diet. You have to exercise. You have to do so many things to change how your body, what's going on with your body. You don't want to abruptly stop taking the medication, because when you do that, you're asking your own self for a stroke. Stop taking high blood pressure medicine for 6 months. My nephew did it. He was 35 years old, had a major stroke. Now he's in a wheelchair forever. Instead of talking to the doctor, changing his diet, you know what I mean? Those simple things. So don't just abruptly stop taking the medication. Talk to your provider, your doctor, and ask them, I want to get off this medicine. What do I need to do? See a dietitian. You know, those type of things that I...
Those are other services that can be
that's provided with your insurance.
And I think about that when it comes to mental health, because I think people kind of just rely on sometimes psychotropic medications versus like actually seeing a therapist. And I tell clients, like, it becomes you like just kind of putting a Band-Aid on a wound that won't heal if you just take medications but don't really gain the skills to work through that as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad you said that. What are some other things that you teach? I know you talked about the financial part. You talk about that.
And also I teach what I call care mapping.
Okay.
So, you know, as I told you, I only had one person that was helping me with my dad. So I learned about care mapping, which I talked to that person and find out, let's find you 5 people that will say yes to your help. Even if you can put that person on your list for an hour, so you can go out for exercise for an hour. If you're taking care of your family member at home, and that person can watch them for 1 hour so you can go outside and walk to do something for yourself. Because self-care is not selfish. Because you got to take care of yourself. Because you want to take care of yourself so you can take care of them. So I do care mapping with that person. And we find out who that person is. We put them on that care mapping. We talk to them. Are you committed to this? This is something as a commitment. You know, so when that person gets tired and says, I'm tired of the commitment, but I can find you someone else.
So what would you say to someone who is making a care map, who is a caregiver themselves, who feels like a burden to other people around this? What would you tell them?
I would say that sounds, don't be afraid to ask for help. Mm-hmm. Help is available. You know, if you can't get your family members to help, you're going to find someone in your church group, you know, but no one knows if you don't ask for help.
And the other side of that too, Miss Marianne, is that what I have found from not only my own life, but even helping clients, is that when you feel like you're a burden, you in it almost all the time, consequently from that, you feel resentful of other people. Mm-hmm. You feel like nobody wants to help. You feel tired all the time. You're very irritable. You almost feel anxious all the time, having to take care of it's almost like unresolved anxiety from having to know that you have to help people.
And I can remember being that angry caregiver, man, back in the day. And everybody said, oh, she's so mean, Susan. I didn't realize I was just being angry because I had this role.
And you were burnt out.
And I was totally burnt out. And now they see a different me. And everybody's like, ooh.
And it can sometimes be as simple as you saying, yeah, I need a break.
Yeah.
Totally. It can be sometimes as simple as you saying, I need a day.
Yeah.
And you'll be surprised just how much that day would change your whole attitude for a week.
Yes.
Or a day where you can just get some sleep. From just being able to do that. Because I always tell people, and this is just me, that when my son goes with my mom, I don't have to mother. Like, even though
he's not physically with me. My brain, even though he's in the house, I could be working. Like right now I'm talking to you, Ms. Marianne, but he's in the living room playing with his dad. My brain is still in mother mode. Mm-hmm. I can't turn that off until I know he's like maybe somewhere where he's like at daycare with my mom. Mm-hmm. So as a caregiver, you can't turn that caregiving part off. And even when you do get a break, you still probably can't turn it off. But you have a moment to say, I'm doing something for myself.
Yeah. And long as, like you say, once you put the realization that they're in a safe place, because it's always that you're always going to feel that I feel, even when I would go away and my sister would take on the road, she would take care of dad for a weekend for me and I go away. I still thought about, man, did she give him his medicine? But then once I think about it, she's going to do all that she can do to take care of him. I might as well enjoy my time away.
Because I know me and my husband do things differently, and I just come to understand, like, it is what it is. Sometimes, truly, he does stuff better than me.
Yeah, totally.
And that's okay. So we talked about that. You talk about the financial part. Anything else that you share?
Well, I also share that if you're taking care of your loved ones at home, and, you know, all these things that I think when family members really don't see that if your loved one's in an acute setting in the hospital, had a major stroke, and you want them to come home instantly, sometimes they can't. You got to allow them to go to rehab.
Yeah.
You know, but you want to do everything. Come on, I'm going to get them home. And some, I have seen this happen recently. You know, they'll take them home, and now they want them to come back into the emergency room so they can get back to the rehab center. Because they couldn't do it. They couldn't take care of them because they was not prepared.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
You know, I see that the hospitals, and I'm not talking about nobody hospital, but I don't see them giving them all the tools to work with.
Yeah.
You know, how to, you know, change a dressing, you know, wound care, you know what I mean? How to use the G2 feeding. Listen. Tube, all of those different things.
Listen, because it's a whole thing. And when you don't have the proper understanding about it, you feel ill-equipped. You end up having a YouTube stuff that really should have been taught in the hospital.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So I see all of that.
So I will say, just in general, y'all, from having had coach Miss Marianne when I did Show Up Sis, and really having had known her over this time, she is extremely passionate about helping caregivers. So if you are a caregiver and you find that you are just struggling and you don't have a safe space, or you find that you really are having a hard time navigating through, you have questions about stuff that you don't even know you have questions. If something on this podcast hit you, we only talked for a certain amount of time. But she has years and years and years of knowledge. And I would say, more personally, if I was in this situation, I would call you and be like, Ms. Marianne, please help me understand what to do. And so if you need that help, please reach out to her. I'm saying this and I will say it till I'm blue in the face, because she is 1000% passionate about helping other caregivers have support and know and learn the things that they need to do, but also provide the safe space to be able to say, I'm struggling, and that's okay if you're struggling. So why don't you tell people where you can find you? Of course, I will have all of Ms. Marianne's information if you're interested in possibly working with her. She has a ton of resources, but also working with her more personally, she would take her time with you and also be very, very helpful throughout the process with you. So why don't you tell the people where they can find you and also provide us with some of the things that you do, Ms. Marianne?
Yes. Okay, so you can find me on my website, which is caregivercorner.co. And on that website, I have a caregiver course. If you never did caregiving, it's a course there available for you. Also, you can go to that website as well to get on my Calendly account, which is Calendly.com, Marianne Johnson. I do give 15-minute consultations just to talk about what's going on and see, can I help you in that conversation, or also we can, you know, go further. But definitely check out the website. I have things available. And also, I have a podcast. It's called Caregiverologist Podcast with Marianne Johnson. It's on all the podcast sites.
Also, all the podcast platforms.
Platforms that you can check out. I talk about a lot of things about caregiving. So, check me out. I hope to, talk to whoever needs caregiving life coach, because, caregiving is not a solo activity. So you can't do it alone, but you can get a team so you can be successful as a caregiver and also continue to have your own life. All right. Thank you, Roslyn, so
You're
much.
Welcome.
It's been a joy.
Yeah, this was so good. This is so good. So I have all of Ms. Marianne's information. Y'all, please, I don't toot a lot of horns, but I'm tooting her horn on this one because she really, really is so good at this and super passionate. So I would love for you to have the opportunity to work with her if you're super interested. So definitely check out her information in the show notes. And if you have any questions, just let me know or her know. And I love y'all, and we'll talk next week.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.